Welcome to this afternoon's meeting of the Liverpool Local Planning Panel. My name is Michael Mackey. The other panel members on the meeting today are on my far right, Stephen DeBella Brown. On my immediate right, Jason Perica, and on my left, Grant Christmas. Before I call the first item, I'd just like to explain a little bit about our role and the meeting procedures. Our role is to determine the applications that are on today's agenda. We will do that either by refusal, approval, or in exceptional circumstances, deferral, pending additional information. If you're here representing an applicant, we're not able to accept amended plans. If you want to amend your plans, in light of the council report, you'll have to request the panel defer the application and submitted through the council offices, although I don't think there's any matters on today's panel that we're applicants will want to amend their plans. For the record, the panel has inspected the site of each of the development applications on today's agenda. We've read the council officer's report and the support documents. In terms of meeting procedures, I only have one person listed to speak, but I'll make a general invitation for anyone who wishes to speak to the panel. If you do speak to the panel, if you can keep your submissions to 3 minutes, the panel can extend that time period if necessary. If you're here representing an applicant, the panel may have some questions for you. After the public part of this meeting is concluded, the panel will then adjourn in private and we will prepare our minutes. The minutes will identify the resolution of the panel in relation to each item. The minutes will be publicly available on the council's website by close of business tomorrow afternoon, and any notices of determination that come from those minutes will be dealt with by the council officers in due course. Before I call the first item, I need to ask if any panel members have any conflicts of interest in relation to any of the items on the panel.
No.
I don't have any conflicts of interest either. The first item on the panel's agenda for today's meeting is development application DA 24/2017 for a staged subdivision of 146 Newbridge Road, Moorbank. The council officer's recommendation is for approval subject to conditions. I have one person on my list to speak, Adam Adam?
I'm happy to defer straight to questions if...
Okay. Thank you. Can I just confirm you're a planning consultant, are you representing?
I'm the representative for Murdoch. So project director of Murdoch.
Any questions of Mr. Perry? Yeah, Mr. Perry.
Hopefully this won't come too much as a surprise, but when the matter was last deferred, one of the comments the panel did make, apart from getting the legal advice, and I've seen both the legal advice provided and the review, that the panel was concerned about the merits of the proposed variation to the minimum lot size in the RE2 zone. In respect to proposed lot 16, particularly having regard to the objectives of the zone and development standards. So can you just provide an overview of why the, and my understanding of it is that the RE2 zone doesn't quite accord with the proposed lot 2 of the subdivision there, including lot 16, across it, and that I think is subject to a planning proposal to change that to be in accordance with the land form. But what's the, so, you know, that was a resolution of this panel. Hopefully it had some time to consider that. I'm not sure if you've updated the clause 4.6, we rely on the original, so it's
okay. I'm going to make an overview of what you...
I'm going to refer that to our planning.
So did you hear that question?
I did.
Oh, good. It was really just an overview of the merits of the clause 4.6, but I mean, on what size, particularly about 16.
This is for Alan Young. Thank you. EMM Consulting. Could I just check with the panel first of all, were you in receipt of the additional information provided about any support of the section?
We've got a whole lot of information, but it'd be helpful if you can give an overview of it.
Sure. I was asked to add some additional information to the Boston planning submission that was previously submitted. In essence, what I've looked at is it's almost a legacy issue for this site, where the original zoning seems to follow the landform generally, but when we're looking at the area that's now proposed as Super Lot 2, what we've got is a triangle of land, we'll call it the triangle for ease of reference, but when we're talking about the triangle of land, it is almost an orphan site from the rest of land that is zoned R3. It shares almost every physical attribute with land zoned R3. It's the same level, it's the same composition, that type of thing. And I think if you look back now, there may be a satellite image, you'd see quite clearly there's a line that cuts across sort of a physically similar landform, but then and pushes that triangle back into an area which, for the rest of the area, for the developed area, is basically significantly lower. It's an excavated area, it's mostly submerged most of the time. So the physical homogeneity, if you like, is more in common with the R3 rather than the RE2. And what that's resulted in, of course, the minimum lot size, which is the subject of what we're talking about today, follows the land use zoning generally. And that means what we've got is a little bit of land from a legacy issue point of view, which has a minimum lot size of 10,000 square metres. But the little triangle itself is around 3,800. So what we're preparing to do is to deal with a physical landform that has a similar characteristic in a similar way, and that means we look at the triangle as part of the other land which is zoned R3. That's what we're trying to look at. Within that triangle, the super lot subdivision would create one lot, and then subsequently lot 16, which is for the purpose of community subdivision, subdivides again further. Now, both, as you'll appreciate now, both of those subdivisions are not for a specific purpose, they're really just for subdivision. So the actual future use of the land that is normally called lot 16 at the moment within the triangle could be something which is completely aligned with the R2 zoning, or if council sees fit, subject to a different development application, it could be a residential development. So it's ambiguous as to what its ultimate purpose will be. But the problem stems from this historical zoning and the little sliver that doesn't relate to the rest of the land that's zoned RE2 whatsoever. It's got a lot of fill in there. If you were to, for example, say, well, why can't you just excavate that and make it part of the marina? You're erupting up all sorts of problems. What we're looking at is kind of a practical solution to how to deal with this issue of the triangle of land. And I think, again, just speaking about the subdivision purpose and so forth, subdivision development, I should say, I took a quick look at the John Whitehouse guide for this sort of thing. And as far as I know, I've got a reference here that Carlos has given to me, but it's sufficient that a development is consistent with the zone objectives and it doesn't need to overtly promote the zone objectives in the White House view. And also the development is not necessarily inconsistent if it's ambivalent to those things as well. So it's open to council, I think, to form a view that this is an appropriate use of the land. So I can go through the individual objects for the zone and maybe...
No, it was in page
1920. Okay, I'll open to questions then.
But if the subdivision, the essence of the legal advice, the subdivision is different from use. Use is a separate DA, so we can't go there. And then we've also got a planning. We can't foreshadow any determination by a number of authority about a rezone.
Yeah.
So we've got to look at the zones and the planning objectives of the standards by now. I guess there's one objective in the minimum lot size C on page 119, or if you've got the objectives of clause 4.1 in front of you, 4.1C, to prevent fragmentation of land, which would prevent the achievement of the extent of development nature of uses in visits by a particular location. So might your arguments about the physical characteristics of the land be used to say you are actually fragmenting that part of the site for prior vacant space, assuming it doesn't get changed, that might otherwise be achieved?
Well, again, I
guess that's the only one that jumps out of turning my mind to that fragmentation issue.
Yeah,
during your
I imagine that the fragmentation of land relates to adjoining land as well. So are we not, if we stick with the current zoning, fragmenting that land equally from a use for, you know, as part of a community title scheme and so forth? It really comes back again to the landform that we're talking about, the legacy issue of this little sliver of land that seems to have been orphaned by the...
creating a lot for a physically fragmented characteristic might actually help in achieving the objectives because they have different characteristics, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not... I don't think it's simply around, creating smaller than necessary lot sizes and so forth. The fragmentation of land is really you sensibly think that really should have been zoned that way in the first place. And what we're doing is rectifying, in some ways, a fragmentation that's already happened.
And I know, as I said earlier, but I want to make sure I read the right information and justify you. What's the date on your updated information that you've got there?
For Liverpool LEP?
No, for yourself, we'll provide additional information to council.
Is it a revised?
5th of February?
No, it is a revised clause 4.6.
Well, we've got two documents now. There's the one prepared by Boston Planning, which you've no doubt seen. I've prepared a brief...
Addendum?
It's more additional information in support, again.
What date is that?
That's the 5th of February 2000.
I'm just trying to get my head around this. So the position is then that currently under the RE2 zone, the minimum lot size is 10,000 square metres. Is that right?
That's right.
And I accept what Mr. Perrick says about, in terms of a possibility of a rezoning, it may or may not eventuate, but nonetheless, as I understand it, sought to be zoned to R3. The minimum lot size is 300 square metres, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
And what is proposed here is 377.
And you'll notice as well
on higher land, which is why you're seeking rezoning.
Lot 16 includes some R3, which also achieves that minimal size. It's more than 300 square metres for the small bit that's there.
Right.
We've also got land which will still serve the purpose of the R2 being the road that will link to that area. So it's really there's a small proportion of the triangle within lot 16, but not entirely lot 16, which is the crux of the issue.
Yeah,
and just trying to reconcile the difference between lot 16 and the zone boundary, was it the case that the zone boundary accords to that same corner? I mean, there's not a whole lot to say. There's a half a lot of you've got a survey of information. I'm just trying to reconcile those two maps. Certainly not the whole lot, but it looked like there was a common point that it comes to in that probably.
Yeah, but can I?
Yeah.
Copy this one.
So this should give you a better idea of the colour coding. So lots of extending.
I'm sorry, I don't know what that says, but there.
So it's like a boomerang shape.
Yeah.
A boomerang shape, if you like. Part of which is identified as the community title scheme. This is to service the.
But that's the line anyway. So the bit that's RE2 is the green, and it's existing RE2.
So that just sort of gives you an indication of the area of the.
Yeah, no, that's just reflecting the arguments, just trying to find the facts of where the boundary between the zones is relative to that block. That answers it. Thank you.
Did you get that?
Yep, thanks.
Any questions? Yes, the other gentleman might have a one that's to do with the flooding of the site. We recently had flooding through the area quite extensively, and I wonder if the owner took the trouble to have representatives on site to observe the effect of this subject site.
So as part of the works, there's a flood planning level, which is the 1 in 100 year flood plus 500 mil freeboard. So the site will have a minimum level of that flood planning level. So it'll be well above what the current levels are on site at the moment. So the completed levels will basically be all just filled to young in there at the moment. So the flood there, obviously the affectation will be very different once the actual subdivision is completed.
It didn't flood it anyway.
And it didn't flood. So Ern DeBray is the owner of the site and said that it didn't flood. The site didn't flood.
When over the Rodeo portion, which is natural ground or water, or R2 say, the flood didn't go up over the platform. We still have 2 metres of capping to go on top of that, so yeah, no problem.
Yes, well, that's what I was hoping to get, just a recent comment like that about, because we did have quite spectacular flooding through the area, and it certainly would be a good test of how that site would be affected. You mentioned just then about the finished height being higher than what's there now. Are you referring to the big mounds we observed on site, or more to the levelled off area?
The levelled off areas.
Yeah.
The big mound is, I think, is next door.
Yeah.
That's not on our land. Which is a big mound near the between us and the water.
Which is down here. There's quite big. So down, and that's the old flower power site. Mm-hmm. So there's quite a big. They're probably the larger ones. These are just smaller stockpiles that will eventually go into the actual works as backfill to that retaining. But the flat areas, you're right, that flatter area is going to be the one that will be filled up, so it's from that level.
So the big flat area did not go under, the way it went under, and we still have 2 metres of venom capping all across the whole site. So that shows you how much higher we are than the flood.
Questions? I assume there's no one else for item one, Mr. Speakers. Next item on the agenda is development application 995/2017 for demolition of two existing dwellings. I might just wait until you're ready.
All right,
we'll leave the room.
Thank you.
Consultants, ouch.
Development application for demolition of two existing dwellings, construction of a residential flat building with 22 units over 5 storeys at 32-34 McKay Avenue, Moorbank. The council officer's recommendation is for approval subject to conditions. I don't have anyone on my list, but if there's anyone wishes to speak to us, are you guys here for item number 2?
Yep, that's great.
Are you just here to answer questions?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Any questions?
No, yes.
Mr. DeBell Brown?
Yes, I'm referring to page 292 of the council staff report to do with car parking. And It relates to the functioning of this place and the number of car spaces, considering the number of units. I was hoping you could explain to me how it would function effectively without people having to park on the street and cause nuisance that way.
Better town planner.
Spaces.
Yeah, why, we have enough
spaces. Do you want to come up to the microphone,
please?
Yeah, we had many discussions with council regarding the car parking during the process. We have made significant amendments to the original proposals. And right now we have more car parking than was required by council's since council's DCP. We also have prepared traffic analysis prepared by engineer to make sure that there is all enough passing space for the cars to go without impacting access.
So traffic is an important issue, being opposite the school there. School time makes a very busy road when the children are coming in the morning and going in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So I thought it particularly important that this should be a functioning, well-functioning development if it goes ahead. And could you comment on that too, about the functioning during those peak times?
It's just a sort of car park, it's not really a big car park. I'm not a traffic engineer, but we have engaged a traffic engineer to prepare that type of those simulations during the assessment process. We believe that we are addressing that issue, so I don't think there should be any unreasonable waiting times or traffic in the car park, especially because it's a small development and we are providing two-way access like all the time, so there is no bottlenecks that should cause issues unless of course unforeseen circumstances, but in principle this is standard practice in developments of this size, and I don't believe we have any departure from standard practice.
And are you aware if there need to be any changes to the parking restrictions outside the proposed complex at the moment? And that is, there are signs there that affect the parking during the school early morning and afternoon times. But
yeah, we have visitors car parking in the basement, so we are providing adequate number of spaces, so we are not relying on street parking for this development.
Yeah, I was referring to the actual street side, whether there need to be any further restrictions there.
What type of restrictions are we talking about?
In addition to what's already there in the street, the curbside parking outside the complex.
The curbside parking was not, we are not relying on curbside parking for this development. We are providing visitor spaces inside the building in the basement.
So you're not aware of any further restriction being imposed there?
That has not been considered as part of the design, because we are providing only in the building. We never have this discussion with council of them requesting us to put car parking in the streets, because that's just public space. We cannot rely on them for this development.
And the issue, it's a different issue now of privacy for the people who live behind this site. Could you comment on that?
It's expected that these development, the whole area being R4 zone, that the other properties around would be in the future also become residential flat buildings, have significantly higher densities than they is right now. But in any case, we are complying with the minimum setback separations required by the apartment design guide. So we are addressing privacy by having the building set back between 6, 9, and 12 meters from the boundaries. We also have like privacy screens and have like balconies, so it's not as if we are building to the boundary or anything like that. We have set back a reasonable amount of space which should ensure the required privacy.
And where some of the rooms appear not to be the normal square shape, does that provide problems later on for construction and use of the rooms by people?
You mean the shape of the building? Yeah, if we had like a perfectly square site with heaps of space to develop, it was not a requirement of the developer to try to maximize the floor space ratio, then maybe we could end up with a building that would be much easier to build. But in this case, the priority was to try to get a development that is feasible, and in that regard, it's not just about financial feasibility, but also addressing the requirements of council. And with all these crush of requirements, we end up with the design that we have. That while we understand it's not the easiest one to build, at least it's one that satisfied what council required from us and also from what developers requested. And that's how we end up. And at the same time, the site is not completely square. You see that there's some skewed lines on the boundaries, and we try to use that both for as an advantage in the design to try to get some more articulated facade. So there is, of course, pros and cons of the design decisions that are made.
Thank you. No,
thank you.
Sorry. What was your name, sir?
Your name?
Fabrizio. I'm Siqueira. I'm the architect.
Fabrizio?
Yes.
And your surname?
Siqueira, S-I-Q.
Oh, okay. So you're the architect.
Okay. Yes.
So just coming back to that, the questions about the basement parking.
Yes.
Now, I'm having a look at the plans, and we had a look at the site today. As I understand it, your driveway entrance will be on the southern side, I think it's the southern side of the block. And there was an existing driveway crossing there. You'll be in fact reinstating a crossing for the existing house to the north. So in other words, you're going from two crossovers to one crossover. That's correct, isn't it?
Yes, but before, of course, there were like crossovers for single houses. Now there would be like
it'll be slightly wider.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And in terms of the number of spaces, as I understand it, you're proposing 39. You're required to have, I think, 37. So you got a plus two, and that's where you're saying we got more than the requirement.
Yes, we have a bit more. So some of the units they have more than the minimum requirements for them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And you've used a tandem arrangement for a number of the spaces?
Yes, for the units that have two car spaces, yeah. they have the tandem arrangement. So they're not like really blocking anything. It's just like between the occupants of the units, probably have husband and wife, they're going to, you know, they just manage themselves, which car in the front and which in the back.
Okay, understand. Thank you.
No
questions?
Further questions?
No? No questions. Any other objectors or no one you guys don't want to say anything?
You know, just like I said, we took all your notes and recommendations from the last meeting, and we went to the absolute maximum we could to appease all your concerns. And you know, and I'm sure you've seen on the top floor, we've opened up that communal space, so we've increased, you know, the livability and, you know, the access that every unit has to an open space and private open space on that top floor. So I'm just hoping you're helping.
We know, from my point of view, I know that the amendments that have been made now totally remove any argument about whether the proposal complies with floor space ratio or not, or you don't need a variation request, which is good. The open space on the roof doesn't appear to be creating any other issues that aren't manageable. And the other two items that the panel requested information on have been satisfied as well.
Perfect.
From my point of view, so there's no, I've got no questions.
Yes, yeah,
totally.
Glad to hear it.
Okay. Okay, so that's item two. Now, next item is item three, if you guys want to leave.
Thank you very much.
It's
under the next one.
Item three, development application 356/2018. Which is construction of a five-storey residential flat building consisting 36 apartments at 31 and 32 Passendale Road, Edmondson Park. The council officer's recommendations for approval subject to conditions. I've got no one on my list, but you guys here for...
Yes, yeah? We are. Yep.
Any questions for the applicants on that one? Mr. Bedell, is it a town planning related question or an owner's question or
an architect's
question?
Just ask them, no, we're starting.
Yeah, we'll work it out.
Well, the simple one first, just looking at the name Passon Bay, isn't that P-A-S-C-H-E-N? I was reading about the First World War recently, and that's anyhow.
I think that's how it's spelled in Edmonds and Park.
Yes. Anyhow, relating to the application. Parking, again, similar to the other one, I read in the council, page 389, the council normal requirements of 59, but these other reduced requirements of 47. It's such a big difference in thinking of the long-term functioning of the building there, and people living there, and convenience and whatnot. It seems such a pity to sort of handicap it in that sense for its long-term usefulness. And what would be involved in meeting the council requirements of 59 car spaces instead of the proposed 47?
Well, we tried to reduce traffic.
We have near a train station.
The RMS said if you're near adapted, if you're near 400 meters from the train station, you can go through your code, through that code, and that costs 40 car parking would be enough. We tried to give one car per unit as a minimum in every development. That's the case, and they can rely on the race station, which is
nice. Yes, it just seems to defeat the ideal purpose that council had, was to ensure a good standard of accommodation for people.
Yep.
And I would have thought it makes them more marketable if they have better car parking provisions there. I just wondered, from your point of view, what was the problem with giving?
Also, if you provide more car parking, there would be an impact on the FSR as well. So, depends. We had this discussion about the car parking in council. I think that they're happy about what we're providing, giving extra division of car parking on the street. So, although if they have problems, we can try to address.
Yes. So is the issue, I do know what you're talking about in terms of the gross floor area, that is, the definition of gross floor area provides that that you don't count those spaces that meet the requirements of the council.
Yes.
So what is the council requirement, 40 or 57?
The council requirements of
59,
I just put the RMS requirements. So the RMS requirements is 40,
right.
And we provide 47 with the visitors parking. So.
Oh, I see. So it's 40 in the basement is there, and there's seven external.
Yes,
is that
yes,
right?
Yes, correct.
And you argue the RMS rates apply because it's subject to 765 and it's referenced.
Because we had other development done in similar areas and got closer to the rail station, that's the minimum standard for that section of data. And the RMS said it's that these requirements are general enough.
Can I clarify?
Yeah.
Under 765, yeah. With the depending on the distance from a train station, yep. The RMS rates apply.
Yeah.
I believe this site falls within that distance.
Right.
So
the minimum standard is the RMS standard of 40.
Yeah.
So in other words, they comply, therefore they're not subject to the additional spaces being counted for the purpose of gross floor area.
On page 376, the requirement from page 376 is 39.8 spaces.
Yeah.
That's called up by 765.
Yes.
Just the practicalities of providing extra spaces would mean you'd have to extend the, in some way, the existing floor or have another sub-basement.
Right. If you need to extend the car parking, you need to dig an extra basement level. Extending the same car park in the same level, we can't do it because of the deep soil requirement, and that doesn't allow that, so we need to dig an extra level. To me, that makes an extra 10 space.
We'll possibly cut back the number of units to provide a larger.
What the wind is developed there, we are at the FSR, we are way under the high limit because we're next to the low residential zone. So I don't see why we need to cut the unit.
Excuse me,
John Beckford Bench, probably. Isn't it fair to say that the prevailing development standard is step 65 in this case and we comply with that?
We meet it with the step 65, we meet it with the council request.
I don't see any other requirement we need to meet for just to add extra car parking for sellable reason. Because we're still giving one spot per unit. If not enough, I don't see the I think we comply with the prevailing development standard, which is plus there would be plenty of space on Passander Road as well.
Any other questions?
No.
Okay, thank you. All right, well, there's no objectors for this one here. Well, I'll declare the public part of this meeting closed. As I said earlier, we will now adjourn private, prepare our minutes, which will include the resolutions on each of these applications, and then they'll be published by the council by closing business on tomorrow afternoon. If the resolution is approval, then the council officers will send out a notice of determination in due course, if not in a few days.
Thank you very much. Thank you.